Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the MLB.com Fantasy 411. It is Monday, July 29th. At least it is where we are. I hope it is where you are. My name is Corey Schwartz. Mike Ciano, again, nowhere to be found. Maybe playing his 36th or 54th hole of the
weekend. He's sitting in a sand trap, lying 14, trying to get out.
Hacking away at it, trying to hit it backwards. Yep. None of the voice you hear is Joe Sheehan of Sports Illustrated and the Joe Sheehan newsletter. If you're not a subscriber, shame on you. It's not too late. You should be. A lot of weekend of action on the field, which you would expect, full 45 games, but not so much with the trades. It's almost like the calm before the storm. Trade deadline coming up at 4 o'clock on Wednesday. We finally had one little trade made this morning just before we came in here to tape. Jose Veras goes to the Tigers for a low minor league prospect. So from a fantasy standpoint, there are ramifications there. Veras presumably becomes a setup guy. That opens up the Astros bullpen. But this is sort of like, you know, we had Matt Garza, we have this trade. There's still a big flood of activity waiting to happen.
Let's hope. Otherwise, it's going to be a fairly disappointing trade deadline. We're sitting here now. We're about 56 hours away from the trade deadline. The Veras deal, a fairly minor deal. There are just still this imbalance between buyers and sellers. Now, we saw some changes over the weekend. The Phillies with a long losing streak. The Giants were getting swept. The Jays have slipped. We may see some teams shift into that seller mode. But right now, it's still wondering. We keep waiting. Is there going to be the flood? And I'm sticking with my original premise, Corey. I think that Garza is going to be the biggest name traded.
Okay, so let's talk about, you know, we don't want to get into hypotheticals too much because we could look stupid in 2 days. But tell me a couple of guys that you think...
Before.
Right, exactly. Why start now? You know, I'm old enough for that. Let's talk about a couple of guys who could get moved. And, you know, the guys, let's say, with the biggest potential fantasy impacts who may reasonably get moved. And there's always going to be one or two trades that come out of left field and we're like, But there are some guys right now that their names are just so hot that it's almost going to be a foregone conclusion that they're going to go somewhere. Shoot a couple names at me.
Well, certainly this morning, and Buster Olney reporting that, you know, the Phillies are now in sell mode. Chase Utley's got to be at the top of that list. He's a free agent at the end of the year. They've talked about an extension with him, but I think they're better off trading him. Maybe go in and try to get him this offseason. There aren't a lot of impact bouts out there. All the guys we've talked about aren't huge upgrades, aren't middle of the lineup hitters on a good team. Chase Utley is. The problem with Utley has been staying on the field, but when he plays, he's still one of the best second basemen in baseball, slugging over 500 this year. The OBP hasn't quite been there. Good percentage-based stealer who doesn't run as much as he used to, but particularly in a second base pool, both in the major leagues and in fantasy, he's an impact player. If he crosses over into your league in the AL, you're blowing out your fab for him.
Right, and I think you touched on the key point there right at the end that it's tough enough to find, you know, on the real trade market, it's tough enough to find an impact bat to begin with. To find one at second base, a guy who can hit for power, who can run, who's good defensively still. You know, you look at contenders, the Tigers who just got Veras, Omar Infante continues to be injured and is really sort of a, you know, an average at best option there. That would be a huge impact. I mean, imagine him batting second between, Austin Jackson, Cabrera, Torrey Hunter, who's showing more power lately, although, I mean, it could just be a blip, moving down into more of a run producer type role, really stretching out that lineup. The A's that look like a complete team, they could use a second baseman. They haven't really had a solution there. The Royals, look, you can make fun of the Royals all you want. They are hanging around, and they insist they are in this thing, and they've got, bigger than any other hole, a hole at second base.
I'll throw the Orioles in there as well. They've gotten Brian Roberts back recently, but Brian Roberts' history is not someone who you'd say, oh, he's definitely going to be healthy for the next 60 games. The thing about Utley is that he helps just about everybody. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of teams out there. You mentioned the A's. Isn't Chase Utley like the perfect Moneyball A's type player, complete player, gets on base, a better player than is generally regarded by the public, I think.
So. And an expiring contract.
Expiring.
So they'll take on a $40 million commitment there.
If Billy Bean's going to make a big move, I think that could be. I mean, Eric Sogard's been a decent solution for them. Utley would be a big upgrade.
Well, right. And, you know, you're talking about also the A's. Right now, they're a postseason team. I mean, if the season ends today, they're in. So they're not just thinking about getting to the postseason. They're thinking about what happens there. And look, due respect to Sogard and Adam Rosales and the other guys they've used, there's a big difference between them and Chase Utley. That makes them a much more, you know, balanced offensive team. You know, they're a team that's gotten by the last couple of years on a lot of good players having good years, but they don't have that centerpiece hitter. Cespedes, this year at least, hasn't turned out to be that guy.
If you're a fantasy owner, if you have Utley, you don't like this conversation right now. Because among the places he could go, that's a really bad park for any hitter to get sentenced to. If you are owning Utley right now, almost any place is going to be a downgrade from CBP, but you'd rather see him go to Camden, rather even see him go to Dodger Stadium, which is a pretty good park for flyball hitters, as opposed to a park that just kills everything like Oakland.
But Detroit, also a tough pitcher's, a tough hitter's park, but a great lineup. I mean, again, between Austin Jackson, Miguel Cabrera, Fielder, and look, the bottom of their order has been relatively productive this year. They've gotten some nice platoon work in left field between Dierks and Tui Asisopo. This becomes a full 1-9 lineup. That makes him a number three hitter every time he comes up rather than a two guy, just a table setter.
So what Miguel Cabrera needed was some extra runners on base.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, amazing. He misses four games with the strained hip, comes back and homers on the third pitch he sees, goes 2-for-3 with three RBIs, so they pull him out early. The game's a blowout, fine. Gets ejected the next game. He was already, he had walked. So he was 2-for-3 with two walks and left a partial at bat, and he was charged with the strikeout. It's like, he only needs to play like two games a week. You know, we used to have the joke when when I had Ricky Henderson in my AL only keeper days, well, he's due to come off the DL on Friday. I'd be like, you know what? I'm going to activate him because 3 days of Ricky is probably better than a week of anybody else. That's Miguel Cabrera.
You've been playing fantasy a long time.
Yes, I'm old. All right, let's move on a little bit. Give me a couple more trade guys. All right, so Utley is the big name offensively. Give me a pitcher.
This is self-interest talking, but Joe Nathan.
Okay.
There was some talking this weekend about the Rangers, who have an incredibly deep bullpen, possibly shopping Nathan, not as a seller looking for the future, but trying to pick up the bat they so desperately need. They scored 8 runs and lost on Friday, then they didn't score the rest of the weekend in Cleveland. They need a bat. If they trade Nathan, and this is where the self-interest comes in, the guy who's been holding on to Joaquin Soria and AL Tout over here, the good-looking guy, blue eyes, goatee,
Me?
Yeah.
He
picks up maybe 10, 15 saves the rest of the way. Now, I've held Soria all year, not because I expected a trade, but because I really thought that Nathan would fall off this year. He hasn't. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping a little bit that Nathan gets traded here. Soria moves into that closer spot. I think Soria would be the primary closer. But I think they're still going to massage his workload, so you might see Neil Kotz, Robbie Ross, Tanner Shepherds all pick up saves. But I love this from the Rangers' standpoint because it's taking depth. I mean, it's a move that feels like a seller's move, but it's really just trying to do a baseball value for value trade.
But here's an interesting thing. You know, most of the contenders have deep bullpens already. You know,
the Veras trade cut this off.
Right, exactly.
The Veras trade really cut this off.
And, you know, we'll just touch on that real quickly. Dave Dombrowski referred to Veras complimenting Benoit and Smiley in the late innings. Right. I mean, presumably he's a 7th, 8th inning guy, but they've never seemed totally sold on Benoit as a closer. So I have Veras in mixed out, NFBC. I budgeted 20 saves. I got 19. I feel pretty good about that one. I'm going to hang on to it for a week or two just to see what happens. I want to see his first 2 or 3 outings, see what the usage pattern is. Keep him on the bench just in case. You never know.
I have a lot of respect for Jim Leland, but if you look at how he ran that bullpen towards the end of last year, he showed a little bit of panic. And if Benoit does have 2 or 3 bad outings in a row, you could see Smiley, Veras, even, you know, Al Albuquerque, after that terrible start to the season, he's actually been reasonably effective.
Yep.
So a lot of different guys could get saves. I do think Benoit is reasonably safe. You're right, though. Hold on to Veras, especially, I think in a 12-team mix, you probably can let him loose. But if you're in anything deeper than that, I think Veras is worth holding on to.
In an unmixed, look, he stayed in the AL. In an unmixed, I'm in NFBC's 15-team mixed with a 7-man bench. I can afford to take a bench spot for a week or two just to get a feel for how this is going to play out. You know, I did the same thing with K-Rod when he got traded to Baltimore. You know, let me see how they use him the first couple of times, because as we talked about last week, Jim Johnson hasn't been terrible this year but hasn't matched what he did last year. I finally cut K-Rod over the weekend. But whenever a closer changes hands, you know, or a late innings reliever, it's best to be patient. You don't just cut that guy right away.
Yeah, you hold on to, like I did, hold on to Hector Ambriz for a month before turning him loose. That worked out well. I want to make one more mention on Veras here. Credit to Dave Cameron of Fangraphs, the brilliant writer for Fangraphs. Mentioned that Veras actually is a lot like Octavio Dotel, a very high platoon split guy. So, again, Leland doesn't run the bullpen like this, but a Veras Smiley platoon in the closer role would be genius if he ever decided to go that way. He won't, but watch that when Veras comes up. Watch how he's used in terms of, is he used as a matchup guy or a full inning guy?
All right, you mentioned the Rangers desperately looking for bats. There are a lot of right-handed hitting outfielders on the market. You know, again, the cloud hanging over their head is not just their offense struggling, but Nelson Cruz, their best power hitter, one of the biogenesis guys. We don't know what will happen there. The White Sox, you know, we didn't talk about the White Sox. So let's talk about Rios potentially going somewhere, maybe to the Rangers, and Jake Peavy, who's the biggest starting name on the block right now, and maybe even a better pitcher than Matt Garza.
Well, Rios, I think, is still standing on third base. to try to decide if he wants to try to score on that sacrifice fly that would have tied the game the other day. That's two big base running errors in 2 weeks. Not the thing you want to see from a player you're trying to trade. My problem with Rios isn't, I don't think he's a bad player, but is he, and I keep going back to this, is he a middle of the order hitter on a contending team? And as bad as the Rangers have been, you're talking about a guy who's basically a 270, 330, you know, 440 hitter, and what is it, just 12 homers this year playing his home games in the cell.
Right.
Still 2 years to go on the deal. He's 32. I think that he looks good in this market because, as we keep saying, there's no hitters out there, but I don't think Rios is necessarily a big pickup. He's not going to get a big boost in the park. He's already playing in the cell.
Right.
He's not somebody who, you go to that Rangers lineup, you're not really picking up a lot in context. I don't think it's a great baseball deal, and I don't think it really is a big fantasy move if he gets traded.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you touched on it there. He's already playing in as good a hitter's park as you're going to get. You know, the Rangers have a little bit more OBP. You know, maybe you'd see a little bit of a bump in RBIs, but something negligible. You know, Marlon Byrd's another guy who's been mentioned, having a late career spike for the Mets. I mean, it's really all power-driven. There's no OBP there. Mm-hmm. You know, doesn't run the bases anymore.
And he's actually had success in Texas.
Right. But, you know, Sandy Alderson said, why should we just trade Marlon Byrd? I mean, that could be posturing, you know, but wouldn't the Rangers be better off going for a guy like that who, as you said, is in his walk year, who's going to be a free agent, rather than a guy like Rios? Better defensive value with Rios, mm-hmm. but offensively, it's a wash.
Yeah, and Byrd presumably cheaper, unless Sandy Alderson holding up. Remember, they didn't trade Hairston last year. They didn't trade Reyes 2 years ago. Mets fans, I know I can hear you banging your head on the desk right now.
You made a comp in your newsletter. I don't want to, you know, give out information that would stop people from selling it, or buying it, sorry. But, you know, Utley, you made the comparison between Utley and Reyes that the Mets did exactly the wrong thing. They should have either extended him or traded him. They did neither. The Phillies are in that boat now with Utley.
Yeah, I would have no problem with extending. If you could do something 2-28 with an option for Utley, sure, do that. But you have to do one of those two things by Wednesday. You can't just say, well, we want to keep him around. And unless, you know, if he really expresses the desire to stay, maybe you figure you can work something out. But what you don't want to do, as you say with the Mets, even though you're probably going to make the one-year qualifying offer to Utley, you'll get the draft pick if he goes away. That's not as great a deal as it used to be. You're getting the 33rd, 34th, 35th pick in the draft, and just one draft pick now instead of two. I think what you can get in trade, particularly for a high-value guy like Utley, makes dealing him make a lot more sense.
All right, keep an eye on that. Fantasy Leaguers, Wednesday at 4 o'clock is the day and time to watch. We'll see what happens. What's that?
We jumped away from the White Sox, but we still haven't talked much about Jake Peavy.
Where do you think he goes?
I don't know, and I'm trying to
figure out. Well, thanks a lot. Well, let's get back to Jake Peavy. I don't know.
What is Jake Peavy right now? Jake Peavy, he's
had
one complete season since he won the Cy Young Award. Now, granted, he's, as you would say, pre-disastered, I guess we'd say, because of the injury time he missed, but it just always seems to be something with him. Can you trade for him? You're going to get 6 starts, 8 starts, 12 starts, you know, 15, 17 if you're going into the postseason. Can you count on him for that? Can you trade for him and treat him like the number two that he is?
But if you're the Cardinals or the A's, you kind of don't have to worry about where we've come from. You have to worry about, again, what is my rotation going to look like in October? Mm-hmm. So you acquire a guy with the mindset, this is my number two in the postseason. You know, if you're the Cardinals, you put him right behind Wainwright. You know, if you're the A's, maybe he is their number one because they've got a lot of good pitchers, but is Jared Parker an ace in the postseason? You know, I don't know. You know, is Bartolo Colon? They've got to think about it from the standpoint of I'm renting a rotation anchor for the postseason, and then they can, because they're looking good, they can almost sort of ease him into that spot and then ramp him up then.
Let's go to a 6-man rotation in October. I mean, right now they've got a 6-game lead. Out of the blue, they've turned up with a 6-game lead in that division. I'm not saying they're going to cruise to the postseason.
Right.
We've seen many, many collapses the last couple of years. But their position now, as you keep saying, it's when you get to that point, you do start to think less about August. Let me phrase this properly. The closer you are to a certain postseason berth, particularly winning a division versus a wild card, the more you can think about winning 3 straight series. Yeah. The Yankees, for years, kind of got to October. You know, they put Nelly, you know, I say this like you don't know him. They put Nelly on the DL, felt like, for 4 months. They bring him back in September, warm up, and then he'd be there in the postseason. Darryl Strawberry a couple of years like this. You make a good point. The A's could trade for Peavy, tamp down his workload going into October, and then say, hey, look, we need to get
then
5 good starts out of you.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so keep an eye on that. There were a couple of transactions over the weekend of note not related to the trade deadline. One guy going, one guy coming back. We'll start out with the guy who's going out. Albert Pujols goes on the DL with a torn plantar fascia in his foot. He is likely done for the year. 5th straight year of straight-line decline in his OPS, career-high strikeout rate. He'll be 34 next year. We know he's not the player he used to be. how do you value this guy in fantasy as a keeper and then looking at 2014?
Yeah, he's not a keeper. I mean, 12-team AL only, sure, maybe. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just looking at the names that are going to be out there next year on draft day, five guys I know are better than him. Fielder, Votto, Goldschmidt, E5, and Adrian Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. Alan Craig will be outfield eligible, so if you want to put him in that group, fine. But likely it's not. Alan Craig will be an outfielder. Three young guys that I think have to be listed ahead of Pujols, and Chris Davis, Eric Hosmer, Freddie Freeman. Mm-hmm. Okay, now that's eight plus Craig. Then you get to the group of guys who, just based on their where they are in their careers, probably have more value than Pujols. Mark Trumbo, who I'm not a huge fan of, just to give you an idea what we're into here, Brandon Belt, and Anthony Rizzo. Plus whoever gets the first base job in Colorado.
Right. So basically what, you know, when you look at first base, those elite guys, those top five guys are all going in the first and second round. You know, last year or going into this year, Encarnacion, Goldschmidt, those were all end of the second, early third round guys. Okay, so what I'm saying is that Pujols now, just by virtue of being maybe the seventh or eighth guy on the list, is a fifth rounder at best, sixth rounder.
I think he's a double-digit round player because it's all there's not going to be a whole lot of upside. He's 34. He's not going to run anymore. Mm-hmm. Not only that, that's going to affect his runs scored. You've got the RBI. Remember, the Angels are not a high OBP team, so they generally don't put a ton of guys on in front of you. So now you're talking about Pujols coming back, maybe hitting 290, 300, 25 to 30 home runs. The context stats aren't going to be great. He doesn't run. He plays a position where you can always find guys with upside.
It's almost
but
like
other than that, I think he's a great player. I'm talking about him as the 12th or 13th best first baseman. I'm talking about him as a double-digit round pick.
It's somewhere like in between where you used to take Adam LaRoche or Paul Konerko. You know, Konerko was the last guy who put up good numbers but was unsexy, and then LaRoche was the last guy who, all right, that was the cliff.
At least he's going to play.
Right. Like, if you don't get LaRoche, you're just punting first base and you're filling in with a corner guy late. Pujols is somewhere in that tier now where he's, you know, he's still a desirable player, I think, in the sense that you know he's got power, you know he's still a good hitter if he's healthy and everything. But with all the reports,
we don't even know that anymore.
Yeah.
Five straight years of decline, he'll be 34 next year.
Scary.
I can guarantee you, absolutely guarantee you, that he is going to be, because of the reputation, because of the Hall of Fame career, when all the sheets start coming out next year, he's going to be probably 3 to 4 slots too high at first base, 40 to 50 slots too high on overall rankings. I really believe he's going to be one of the most overrated players in fantasy next year.
You're pretty harsh, man. You're seriously
amazing. I haven't even started talking about that face of yours.
Thank God we're on radio. All right. Coming back from the DL, Derek Jeter comes off the DL on Saturday, sees a pitch, hits a homer, naturally. Yankees, 28th in baseball in OPS as a team, 28th by their shortstops. Only Seattle and the Mets have gotten less at shortstop. So adding Derek Jeter has to be a good thing for their offense. I mean, is this just, you know, slapping a silk hat on a pig, as Mike Ciano would say?
Well, Jeter can still drive the ball against lefties. It was against Mike Moore that he hit the home run, which isn't to dismiss it, but this Jeter's skills at this point, he can drive the ball against left-handers. He'll slap the ball against right-handers. I don't know how well he's going to hold up at shortstop. This is a player we've always had arguments about his defense. I do think the Yankees desperately need whatever he brings. This is a team that's basically been playing Gardner, Cano in the waiver wire for much of the year. He helps them. I mean, forget the debates about, you know, Jeter over the years. He helps them. He's going to bat second. If he's healthy, he's going to be in the lineup every day. If they get Granderson back, now they've got Soriano, can at least make a case that Jeter might be, it might give you average and runs scored. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not going to hurt you. Again, it's shortstop in the American League, which, you know, it looks a little bit deeper now. You look at both Franklin and Miller are shortstop eligible. So, I mean, shortstop's gotten a little bit better this year, but I think Jeter's got to be somebody, you know, even in the most shallow leagues, I think I'm grabbing him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we realized this in the last month or so. I mean, we probably should have seen it coming a lot sooner, but the reality just became so blatant that a year ago, two, 3 years ago, you'd bench your pitchers against the Yankees. Now, I'm picking up free agents to pick on the Yankees. They are 28th in baseball in OPS. And like you said, outside of Cano and Gardner, you see outs all over that lineup. You know, Ichiro is still a useful player in fantasy because of the steals and everything, but not a particularly good major league hitter. Chris Stewart, Eduardo Nunez, Jason Nix, David Adams, Zoilo Almonte, and Melky Mesa. Like, they don't have a lineup with major league hitters in it.
I grew up 5 minutes from the stadium, so I'm really enjoying this right now. Can you keep listing the bad Yankees that have played for them this year?
All right. Yeah, I could, but let's not. All right, you mentioned Nick Franklin. I was going to bring him up anyway. I'm a huge Nick Franklin fan. A pair of three-hit games over the weekend, two homers on Sunday, 10 homers and five steals in 52 games. You can prorate that yourselves. He's been a revelation. And, you know, the Mariners, still not a great lineup all in all, still a tough ballpark. he's really, I think, outperformed expectations. How do you rank him going into next year?
My love for him dates to seeing him at the AFL a couple of years ago. I just think he's a complete player. I'm disappointed they moved him off the shortstop. I really thought he could have played a major league shortstop, and that's going to hurt his value going forward. You look at second baseman next year. There's a top three now: Cano, Pedroia, Kipnis. Right? I don't think he's in that group. That next group down, though: Kendrick, Chase Utley. Because of the playing time, you got to knock him down. Matt Carpenter, Brandon Phillips. The top of that list.
Kinsler.
Well, that's going to be the key guy. I think I like Franklin as much or more because of the age difference than all of those other guys. Kinsler, because he typically steals, he's not running very well this year, is a guy like Nick Franklin versus Ian Kinsler I could see as being that number four slot next year. But I do think there's a drop-off from the top three to this question, but I could see Franklin as high as four. Some of the questions are going to be, do you think he's going to run? He's 5 for 6 this year. He's not a big base stealing guy, and do you believe in the power? Remember, 22 extra base hits in like 50 games or so. That's a little bit ahead of where you'd expect him to be.
Yeah, and that's a good point you brought up there that, you know, I'm not surprised he's put up value at the major league level since coming up. I'm a big fan too, but the shape of his value has been very different. You know, let's just look, again, very small sample size, 39 games at AAA, 30 walks and 20 strikeouts.
First time he'd ever done that.
Right, but you know, look, coming up through the ladder, you expect guys to develop skills. Only 4 homers, and that was playing in Tacoma in the PCL. Since coming up to the Mariners, 10 homers in 52 games, a lot more power than you would have expected, but he hasn't controlled the strike zone, 50-19 strikeout to walk rate. So I wonder if his true value is somewhere in between, where you say he's a guy who's going to give you, you know, maybe a little bit more power, not as much speed, not as much run, you know, batting average, but the overall value, the overall package is still there. As you said, a complete player. So 1 year it could be a little bit more power, 1 year he could run a little bit more, 1 year he could luck into a 310 average. There are a lot of different ways he can provide value. Let's compare and contrast him to Brandon Phillips, who used to be that 30-30 guy. He has 1 steal this year.
Yeah, well, guys cross into their 30s, they stop running.
Yeah, but I think that's, you know, there's a perception of Brandon Phillips as being something, he's still a very valuable player, but he's not the guy he used to be. None of us are.
Well, if he wasn't batting fourth behind Joey Votto and Shinsu Chu, we'd be having a different discussion about Brandon Phillips.
Right.
I know Franklin's really one of the more interesting guys out there because, as you say, you know that he's valuable, you're just not quite sure how he's going to be valuable. Do you see him as that 4-5 slot, or do you have him below some of these other guys?
I thought, you know, Kipnis was a good comp because looking at last year, I thought Kipnis would show a little bit more power than he did last year, but I didn't see him as a consistent 30-steal guy. And of course, this year he's turned out to be both. You know, Franklin sort of reminds me of Kipnis in that sense that I know he's going to give me, let's say, 35 homers plus steals. It might be 20 and 15, it might be 15 and 20, who knows? It might be 12 and 30 1 year. But I like that overall package of value. But yeah, you know, I think Carpenter will rank very highly. Not a multi-position guy like he is coming into this year, but very high average, scoring a ton of runs. He could score 125 runs this year.
Yeah, I'm not sure where he'll play next year because they still have Colton Wong, who I still think is a good prospect, but he'll have second base eligibility, so wherever he plays, he's going to be good.
Right.
The Cardinals might be the one team in baseball, and this is not the era where we talk about this. Cardinals actually have too many good players. None of them play shortstop.
It's amazing. The Cardinals have become that offense now. I see them on the schedule. I bench my pitchers against the Cardinals.
They're what the Yankees were a couple of years
ago. Right, exactly. All right. Let's mention a couple of other young guys. Will Myers, you know, look, no again, sort of like Franklin, no surprise he's become a productive major league hitter, but 328, I mean, that's amazing. 354 OBP, 537 slugging. He's got a 10-game hitting streak right now with 9 of those multi-hit games. I mean, there's nobody hotter, never mind the fact.
Did you see the three-wood he hit yesterday into the left field bleachers?
The one that hit the light stanchion? Yeah, got up there in a line, and it hit the pole and just stuck there. You know, again, I think people thought it was overdue when the Rays brought him up. They thought he'd produce right away. But I think he's a little bit beyond expectations right now.
The averages. I thought he'd come up, hit for power, not really get on base very much. You see that gap between the OBP and the batting average isn't very high because he's not walking a whole lot. The power is for real. The power is absolutely for real. This is a guy who right now is a 30-homer hitter in the major leagues. Do I think he's a 328 hitter in the major leagues? Maybe at his peak. I think realistically he's a 275 hitter right now. But, you know, one of the things about guys who get to the majors at a young age is that, and we saw this with Franklin, we just talked about, you know, they're dynamic. They can improve drastically. And we know that if the Rays do one thing, it's develop young players very well. Mm-hmm. So maybe I screamed and yelled for 2 months. Why isn't Will Myers in the majors? Literally, I was down at the street corner yelling this out. But maybe they were right. Maybe they were right to wait through the strikeout issues at Durham and let him rake for a while and then bring him up. So I have a hard time arguing with a team that has that called him up when they did and has the guy with a 900 OPS.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Archer.
And he's going to end up with the Rookie of the Year, by the way.
Chris Archer, we'll talk about him a little bit more, too, that, you know, they churned through some guys in their rotation who were kind of hit and miss. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the former Fausto Carmona, I think, Roberto.
Archer's only got this spot because Alex Cobb got hurt.
Right, exactly. But by waiting and waiting and waiting, he's come up and been effective. I mean, look, it's correlation, causation. We'll never know what would have happened if they brought him up earlier and whatever, but the results are there. You made a good point about Myers, the strikeout issues. Between last year and this year, he's played 163 games at AAA, almost exactly a season. 169 strikeouts, that's a scary number, but 74 walks. So you look at, you know, a guy who strikes out a lot, that's a function of working deep counts and looking for pitches to drive, as opposed to just a guy with a ton of swing and miss.
A true power hitter with a 2, 2.5, even 3-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio, you're fine. You want to avoid those guys that are 5-to-1, 6-to-1, where they're striking out a lot. They're not drawing walks for the OBP, and what it is, you end up with Alfonso Soriano, where you're going to end up with a guy hitting 260 with a 280 OBP and running into 20 balls a year. Myers isn't that guy. And like I say, at his peak, I think Myers is going to hit 300.
Yeah, and I think the reason I brought that up was to differentiate between guys who just happen to swing and miss a lot because they're hackers and guys who are up there looking for something to drive. Jim Thome is the classic example I used to think of with this. Jim Thome would strike out 175 or 180 times a year. He was an outstanding hitter. He just struck out a lot because he was always going to 3-2 counts looking for something to crush, and he was never shortening up his swing. But when he hit it, it stayed hit. And guess what? Homers count as hits, too. So, I'm not going to make a comparison between a guy in his first quarter.
Homers count
just
as
stop.
Hits.
He's so snarky. You know, I'm not going to compare a guy in the first quarter of his season versus a guy who's going to the Hall of Fame, but there's a similar approach there that strikeouts are a function of the approach, not necessarily a flaw in his hitting ability.
I get your principle. I will also say that Myers isn't quite that guy. Myers isn't in that Adam Dunn, Jim Thome, three true outcomes level. He's really more of somebody who's going to strike out a lot. I'm actually having a hard time coming up with a comp for him. Adam Jones undersells him.
Right.
It might not be a great example of him in today's game. I go back, I think about, you know, guys like Sheffield walked more, guys like Thomas walked more, Piazza, Edgar Moore, the great right-handed hitters of the previous
compare him to Jay Bruce.
Jay Bruce, I don't hate that.
Jay Bruce doesn't draw a ton of walks. His batting average has gradually creeped up because
the
power's
raw power is incredible. Right. I mean, that comp.
Yeah, I mean, Jay Bruce is a guy that you figure at his peak will hit 280 with 40 homers and will steal 10 or 12 bags, which is nice. Will Myers has 4 steals already in a quarter of a season. You know, so from a fantasy standpoint, there's a little bit of hidden value.
It's comparing right-handed hitters to left-handed hitters. You know, you got to get out of that,
always
that mindset.
You, off.
You know, that's a really good comp.
All right, thank you. There we go. I like that one. One more young one hitter I want to mention before we move on to the mound. Jonathan Villar, the Astros, he's been installed as their shortstop, their leadoff hitter. 3 steals over the weekend. He's got 4 in 7 games. Super, super small sample size. But this is a guy who peaked at 45 steals a year in the minors. From a fantasy standpoint, you got to take note of that.
I want to make a point about the team he's joining right now. The Astros, they're 3rd in the league in stolen base attempts under Bo Porter. They're last in OBP. So if you want to look at, you know, how often, like opportunities, Bo Porter has the green light and he wants his guys to run. Villar's going to get a chance to run. You mentioned the Steelers in full seasons, 60 stolen base attempts, 46, 47. This year he had 38 and 91 games down to AAA. He's at AA if I remember correctly. The point is, Villar is somebody who's run historically despite not being a high OBP guy, 330 OBP in the minors, and he's joining a team that runs despite not being a high OBP team. There could be a lot of upside here. If Villar can get to first base, Bo Porter's going to let him get to second.
Yeah, and, you know, steals, we've talked about a lot. Steals are elective. You know, being fast is one thing, but if you've got a green light, you don't have to be fast. I mean, look at Will Myers with 4 steals. You know, I always go back to the year Rafael Palmeiro, I think, had 22 steals with the Rangers. He was a 5, 6, 7 steal guy. And then one year they said, we are going to run this year. And Palmeiro ran and got 22 steals. He didn't suddenly get faster. They just took advantage of the opportunities. You know, Villar, the big concern you have to have, the strikeouts. I mean, unlike Myers, where it's a function of approach, this guy's a hacker. 583 strikeouts in 543 minor league games. That's not good. 26 at-bats with the Astros, 13 strikeouts already.
He's not bringing the power to go with that. With Will Myers, you say, okay, at least he's hitting the ball along. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Villar isn't that guy. So as I say, home to first is going to be the challenge for him. I will say this. The Astros have no reason whatsoever, after playing Marwin Gonzalez and Ronnie Cedeno, and they have no reason to do anything but play Jonathan Villar every single day the rest of the year. He's eventually going to be usurped by Carlos Correa, but for now, let him play.
I love that word, usurped. That's a great word.
It's a Monday morning word.
That's a good word. One last thing I wanted to bring up Going a little out of order here, but since we're talking about the Astros right now.
I got to flip the page now.
Yeah, you got to go back to the front. I know. All right, they traded Varus. We didn't mention this. Who do you think closes for them now? Somebody's got to
close. It's going to be Hector Ambriz. You know why?
Because you held on. Because you cut him.
Because I fabbed him for $12 right after he got those two save opportunities. He never got another save opportunity. I packaged him in a trade for Mariano Rivera, giving up on him completely. So now Hector Ambriz, a month later, will get 12 saves down the
stretch. Okay, I'm going with Jose Cisnero. Strikeout an inning, walks a lot of guys. He's basically what Jose Varus was 3 years ago. But he's moved into the eighth inning a lot over the last couple of weeks. There were a couple of times, we just saw this actually in Varus' last outing with the Astros, or next to last, he had a five-out save. But before that, Cisnero had been that eighth-inning guy. So, look, you know, we're maybe talking 8 or 10 saves the rest of the way, but if I were going to pick up one guy, that's the guy I would grab.
Remember, bad teams get saves too.
Sure. Well, that was my thinking in the 20, that, you know what, no matter how it shakes out, I figure the Astros are going to win 55 to 60 games this year. More than half of wins end up in save opportunities, so I'm going to call it 35 save ops. I figured he'd be traded by the deadline. He'll get two-thirds of those save ops and convert 80 to 85% of them. 20 saves. Got 19. It's not bad.
Get you, nerd boy.
Look at me with the big math.
We should call you stats. Oh, wait a minute.
Imagine if there was like a job you could get where you dealt with stats and baseball and stuff. All that would
be kind of
awesome.
Cool.
I'd love that. All right, let's move over to the pitching side. And I'm going to do a Mike Ciano and go off the order that I have in the rundown. But since we mentioned Will Myers and we're talking about the Rays, let's get back to Chris
like
Archer.
Like the Peyton Manning of the 411.
I audibled.
You could call audibles.
I audibled.
He's actually making the hand motions.
I'm making hand signals. All right, Chris Archer, two hits the Yankees on Saturday. That ain't what it used to be, but you throw a two-hit shutout, that matters. 2.39 ERA in 67 and two-thirds innings.
I can't believe I'm about to do this, but I actually am a very strong sell on Chris Archer. Actually, when he had the shutout the other day, it was second shutout in shutout in four starts, I immediately put him up for, basically sent an email out to AL Tout. I have him in AL Tout. I got him for a reserve pick, and I'm very proud of that. I don't know how Jason Collette let me do that, but sure, thanks, Jace. but I put him out. I said, this is not just a trade high thing, but you look at the underlying performance, and it doesn't support what he's done. Now, I think Chris Archer's a heck of a pitcher, but he's not going to get any better than this. The great July, he's had five starts, 22-7 strikeout to walk ratio, which isn't really that impressive for the 0.73 ERA that he has. A 16% strikeout rate. Again, that's average minus for a starting pitcher. Yeah. We're not seeing, there's not like some really freaky pop-up rate or anything like that too. He's actually throwing a lot of fly balls. Now you expect the BABIP to be lower on fly balls. One homer on 56 fly balls allowed. None of the underlying numbers support what he's actually done. There's no real change in what he's doing. He's a good pitcher, and he's going to be, to my mind, a 3-1, 3-2 ERA guy. I think there's actually some decent. I'm not a scout, but if you told me that he was going to have Jeremy Hellickson's last couple of years right now, I would take that. But this is as good as it gets, and I absolutely recommend that everybody look to sell him. I think you can get a bat for him. You got to go out and do it. 0.73 ERA, two shutouts. That's trade high if there's anybody.
Yeah, it's almost like I agree with everything you said there. There's a lot to like here and a lot to be concerned about. This guy has a very, very bright future. I mean, sits at 95, great slider. His changeup is improving. He's not throwing it a ton, but he's got good separation between the changeup and the fastball. He's got a great future. But he'll be 25 in September. It's not like he's a young prospect. You mentioned the low batting average on balls in play. Extremely high strand rate, over 80%, which is not just high, that's super high. So you're looking at good luck keeping runners off base, and then when they do get on, super good luck at them not scoring. Now, I don't want to use luck loosely because I know there's skill involved in all this, but those numbers are way beyond the mean.
Isn't a guy with a 70% strand rate and a 260 BABIP.
Right.
This is a guy who's at the extremes of all of these numbers.
I looked it up this morning. I think it's a 216 batting average on balls in play.
That's for the season.
Right. That's 80 points below league average. And I think his strand rate is 80 or 81%. Average, you look somewhere around 75.
For the year, strikeout rate's only around 2-1.
Right. 47 to 25. So next start is San Francisco at home. You got to like that one. The start after that is at L.A., 2 months ago, you would have laughed at that. You would have been psyched. Now the Dodgers are scoring.
We don't know who they might have.
With Adrian Gonzalez. So the Dodgers are a much better offense. Now, I think you made a good point there. You know, in a non-keeper league, now's the time to sell Chris Archer. You've got 9 days left before that Dodgers start. You want him gone by that Dodgers start. Maximize the return right now and get the rest of the season. And also, that's when you might say, not the wheels fall off, but you might start to see a little bit of regression happen that's coming anyway, against a tough offense.
The nice thing about this too, I don't know exactly how it's going to fall, but there's a chance you actually, if you haven't sold him already, you could be selling him going into a two-start week 2 weeks from now, which also is an additional, hey, you know, you're going to get the guy now for the two-start week. I think there's a lot of reasons to get him on the market now. I know I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to spend this week trying to not get rid of him. I'm not trying to trade a pitcher who is bad, who just got lucky.
Yeah.
This isn't Jeff Locke, who's the guy I've been, selling on for a while. This is a pitcher who just, it's a peak. He's not going to repeat this. Get rid of him now.
Yeah, I think that's the key right there. You're not getting rid of him. You're selling at the peak of his value. All right, another guy who had a great start over the weekend, Tyler Chatwood, 11 strikeouts against the Brewers on Friday. I didn't realize this until I looked it up. He's made 14 starts this year and allowed two or fewer runs 12 times. That blows my mind for any Rockies pitcher to pitch that well. I don't want to say much less Tyler Chatwood. The guy was a good prospect with the Angels, but has he arrived?
I think maybe he just got rushed. You look back 2 years ago, he was 21 years old. He spent a lot of the year, 25 starts for the Angels a couple years ago, and 11% strikeout rate. He was throwing 93 at the time. They traded him for Chris Iannetta. He spent most of the year last year in the minors. He showed up this year, same velocity, basically the same repertoire, 16% strikeout rate. So I think it might have just been a situation where he just got rushed to the majors in a bad situation. The Angels a couple of years ago, really struggling with their pitching staff. You're right. It's very rare to see a pitcher blossom. We've actually had this Jolas Chacin having a good year with the Rockies this year as well. I think it's the real deal. Now, I think everything gets tempered by it's the Rockies.
Mm-hmm.
And you really want to be careful. But, I mean, Chatwood is a guy who I didn't like a couple of years ago, who I was really bearish on. And now I look and say, he's a different guy. He has become a better pitcher. I was wrong about him. I would be comfortable. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he's an everyday guy. I certainly would start him on the road. And I might even spot him at home with the right matchups.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't want to say you were wrong about him. I mean, I think you made a good point that pitching at the major leagues, I'll never know, but I'm assuming from being a baseball fan my whole life, it's probably pretty hard. So to come up and at 21...
Matt Harvey disagrees.
You know, yeah, not everybody, though, is Matt Harvey or Jose Fernandez or Shelby Miller and can come up and hit it right away. Take a look at Homer Bailey. You know, an elite, elite prospect as a minor leaguer, and it took him 5 years of fits and starts to really establish himself at the major league level. And last year, you know, at the age of 26, was the first year that you would say he was a positive value asset. You know, this year he's taken another step forward. You know, Chatwood, what I really like is... he gets a ton of ground balls, well over 2-1
ground ball rate. He had that 2 years ago, too. He was that kind of guy.
It's gotten even better, and he's improved his command. The strikeouts haven't come up to the level you would have wanted to see. 7.7 strikeouts per nine in the minors, only 5.5 at the majors. I know you like the percentage, but from a fantasy, this tells. But this year, just about one walk per three innings. That's that cutoff of where you say, wow, this guy's got pretty good command.
Almost a 60% ground ball rate.
Yeah. Excellent stuff.
You can live with the slightly lower strikeout rate if the other thing you're doing is ground ball. The strikeout-ground ball combination is an enormously powerful thing.
Right.
So if you're getting strikeouts, you know, 16% of the time and ground balls 58% of the time, 58% of the balls in play, it's very hard to score off you if you're not allowing fly balls, particularly, and again, I keep coming back to that ballpark. I don't know. I think the Rockies have done a really good job bringing this guy along, particularly last year when they could have rushed him to the majors, and they really didn't. They let him get most of the year down at Colorado Springs. So, you know, give them credit for developing the pitcher, and you know, we'll see what goes on. But with every Rocky starter, the problem is the bad starts are really, really bad, and they can wipe out a month for you.
The Bronson Arroyo start where he's rolling along and then gives up 9 runs in an inning and a third.
This is the problem. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's always going to be risk. But, yeah, Chatwood's a good guy to talk about.
One more young pitcher I want to mention, and this guy's no secret to anybody, but I just want to kind of kick him around a little bit. We haven't talked about him in a while. Jose Fernandez, 13 strikeouts against the Pirates on Sunday, 9 quality starts out of his last 10. This guy's had an unbelievable year. You know, starting pitching burns very brightly sometimes and then fades out. I mean, look at how quickly Tim Lincecum fell apart. Jose Fernandez next year, I mean, are you thinking this guy's a number one?
I want to see how many innings he throws this year. And this is actually the focus I had when we were going to talk about him today. How many innings does he throw this year? Because that leads to how many innings might he throw next year.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that pitchers don't follow the career path. We think hitters, okay, they're going to get better, they're going to get better, they're going to get 27, 28 peak. Pitchers tend to be a little more all over the place. Mm-hmm. Good year, bad year, okay year. Something happens. I don't know if I necessarily want to elevate Fernandez as good as he's looked to that level just yet. I think he's probably going to be on that next tier down. If you think about the number one group as your Lee, I don't even know if Verlander's in that group anymore. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's an interesting question. Fernandez versus Verlander next year.
I think you got to take Verlander on the track record. I mean, assuming he pitches somewhat better down the stretch. You know, when I think of an ace, it's not just the performance. what separates the ace guys is the volume. You know, and you mentioned that with Fernandez with the innings. Last year, 134 innings total in the minors. This year, 119 and two-thirds. So let's say he ends up at 165, 170. They have no reason to not shut him down when he hits a certain number. But the thing I like about it, the way they've handled him, and I noticed this about Jared Parker as well. Mike and I were talking about this last week. Jose Fernandez in, what, I don't know how many starts, 20 starts, has topped 100 pitches four times. He's averaging 90 pitches per start. So that's on him for being pitch efficient and being able to get guys early in the count and not run deep counts. But it's also credit to the club that they're not saying, all right, you know, we're going to make a man out of him. This is our horse, whatever. You can look at the innings count, but you have to dig a little bit deeper that they might push the innings count a little further because the innings he's having are very efficient, low-stress innings.
Not just that. You're not just seeing the Marlins here. You're seeing the sea change in how Major League Baseball handles young starters. They don't abuse them anymore. A pitcher abuse is essentially gone in the major leagues, Fernandez being a very good example of it. I will say this. For the short term, if I'm contending for this year, I'm trading Fernandez, and here's why. 119 and two-thirds innings. You mentioned 134 last year. Let's say, let's use your number, 165. So he's got 46 innings left. That could be
seven starts.
It could be as few as six if he's pitch efficient, working. You know, we don't know exactly what they're thinking, but I will say this. At best, it's another seven starts. I don't think he goes another eight starts or so. So I look at the last three guys with, let's say, 20-year-olds to spend the year in the rotation. Porcello in 09 through 170 innings, Felix in 06 through 191, Greinke in 04 through 145. We're going to land somewhere in that 160 to 165 range. So I just don't know that Fernandez can help your team that much more. I know it stinks to think about trading a guy like him, but if you can get 75 more innings, which, you know, most starters have about 11 starts left. It's, you know, your aces are going to have 7 innings to start. This might be the time to look into moving them.
It's interesting. I mean, the real dilemma is, let's say you're in a keeper league and you're in second place and you've got Harvey or Miller or Fernandez. You want to win now. I mean, flags fly forever. That's what you're playing
for. If you
have
all three of them, you're really in trouble.
Yeah, but then again, these are the guys that got you here. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a catch-22 of how do you balance, all right, I'm not worried about winning in 2014. I'm worried about winning right now. But if I trade Matt Harvey or Jose Fernandez or Shelby Miller and I don't win, and I don't have him for next year, that's
what I'm saying. If you trade him, you have to make the kind of deal that, remember, you're trading one of these guys in a keeper league, you can ask for the moon. You're right to ask for the moon. You're making the kind of trade that not just is talent for talent, but you're making a targeted trade. If I'm fifth in home runs and, you know, there's a 12 homer gap between me and first place, I'm getting, pick a home run hitter, Will Myers or whoever, to get me those 4 points. Mm-hmm. I'm targeting. I can ask for the moon with these guys, but this is the time to do it because the three guys you just met, okay, we know Harvey and Fernandez being on bad teams are probably not going to be pitching after Labor Day or so, roughly. Mm-hmm. Miller's interesting because the Cardinals will be in contention, protecting that division title, going into a postseason. The rules might be a little different with him.
And kind of bringing this conversation full circle, you know, the Cardinals have started to get Shelby Miller out of there very quickly.
Last night it was a relatively quick five and two-thirds, right?
Yeah. That's another reason where they might be interested in a guy like Jake Peavy, not only to improve their rotation by adding Jake Peavy, but to take a little bit less strain off Shelby Miller.
Off Adam Wainwright, too, second year back from surgery. I think that he's somebody you might want to say, hey, let's tamp him down, especially if we're trying to get 5 to 6 extra starts out of him in October.
All right, let's go off to the fans now. Joe and I have done enough talking, but we'll talk more in response to your questions. A couple of questions from Twitter. This one comes from Savannah Seniors. Verlander or Jordan Zimmermann the rest of the way?
All of these questions are going to come with me saying I wish I had more information. The more information I know here is do you care about upside or lack of downside? Because I think Verlander right now is the wider range of potential outcomes. Verlander could be Verlander for 2 months or it could be what he's been for the last month. Whereas Jordan Zimmermann, I'm reasonably sure, is probably going to be somewhere in that 3.1 to 3.5 range, good ratio, pick up a couple of wins. So, again, do I want the upside or do I want the lack of downside? And that's without knowing that, I can't answer the question definitively.
Nice hedge. I like the analysis there. I think ultimately you take Verlander because as much as he struggled over the last month, you've got 3, 4, 5 years to let you know what a good month or a good 6 weeks of Justin Verlander looks like. He's still got better strikeout numbers than Zimmermann. He's still got the great run support. They just made an addition to their bullpen to help him out a little bit. You know, the likelihood of Justin Verlander turning into a pumpkin I think for the next 6 weeks, reasonably, you've got to put that at pretty low.
And I'll give you the other reason I like Verlander. A reader of mine, Matthew Freese, actually mentioned he's got incredibly... The Tigers have a very weak schedule in terms of opposing offenses down the stretch. So Verlander's going to be... A lot of these starts against the White Sox and the Twins.
You know who does, too? You know, we talked about Garza, and we were you know, we talked about strength of schedule and everything. The Rangers have a phenomenally easy schedule in the second half. I mean, I just read this last night. They've got a lot of the Astros... they've got the White Sox. They've got the Brewers, who now obviously don't have Ryan Braun. They've got a lot of very weak matchups in the second half. So, you know, we were concerned about Garza going into that ballpark in the American League, but it'll be favorable schedule-wise. All right, this one comes from Joe Straight underscore Edge, so I assume Joe has the X's on his hands. In need of a second baseman and have been offered Utley in one deal and Kendrick in the other, both in exchange for Markakis. Who should I take?
Do you need home runs? Do you need batting average? More, I know it's Twitter, only 140 characters, but that's what it comes down to. I mean, that's the real difference between these two guys. They're both going to score runs, both going to drive in runs, not really what they, you know, big RBI guys, not really big base stealing guys either. It's average versus power. What do you need?
See, I'm taking Utley there. As much as I like Kendrick, and I have him in a couple of leagues, he's had four RBIs in the last month. You know, for all of the struggles that Pujols has had this year, he's basically their second best hitter besides Mike Trout. You know, Kendrick has really regressed in the last month anyway. We knew he was going to. We knew he wasn't going to hit 340. Now you've got a guy who's regressing, one of the rare sources of OBP in that lineup, out of that lineup. Kendrick is trade bait now, if you believe what you read, and who knows. I think we know what we're going to get from Chase Utley. He's not going to play every single day, but he's kind of at that level where you think, all right, this is what Chase Utley will look like the rest of the way. Kendrick has a lot of question marks around him. Is he a 280 hitter? Is he a 310 hitter? He's got 11 homers. You know, is that it for the year, or might he get make a run at 18 like he did 2 years ago? I'd rather take Utley because I know what I'm going to get.
I want to wait 3 days and know where Chase Utley's going to play the rest of the season.
Or Howie Kendrick, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, if Chase Utley goes to Oakland, it changes the dynamic.
All right, I'll tell you what. We'll revisit that on Friday, even though you won't be here. All right, from the blog.
No, let me make a general point, though. Don't make any trades until if you're in a fantasy league, unless you actually have a July 31st deadline, don't make any trades. You really have to be careful. I mean, you know a guy's not going to be traded. That's one thing. But Utley, Kendrick, any of these other guys, wait and see where they are.
Well, yeah, don't trade on spec, definitely. Another one, I know what you're going to say to this. Tell me more about the league. Dan Uggla for Daniel Murphy, straight up.
That's a lot of bad defense in one trade. homers versus batting average. Yeah. I'm sorry. I know I used to pick on this when I was on the TV show as well. But, yeah, this is... I think Daniel Murphy is the better player. I think Dan Uggla is in a much better lineup context, and if you need the power.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, this comes down to Uggla is a pure power play. So if that's what you need, you stick with Uggla.
But he will actively hurt your batting average.
Right, but you know, for overall offensive value, Murphy's got eight homers already this year. That's what you would have expected from him for a full season.
Fair, didn't he have two the other day? So.
Right, but you know what? Even if he had six, I would have said he's already got six. That's what I've expected for a full season. He's got 11 steals, which, you know, again... Stealing is elective. I don't just look at that and say, well, he's not going to run anymore. If they've decided they're going to let him run, you know, we've seen David Wright run a little bit more this year than we have in recent years. There's no reason Murphy couldn't get 18 steals, 16 steals, something like that. So the overall value is probably more with Murphy, but the specific one category need is with
him. Why are you not more, particularly this late in the year, when your standings are fairly fixed and you're looking to pick up points as much as just getting better in general, why do you not bring up, it seems like you're kind of shying away from these things I'm saying. Is it a philosophy? Is it you think it's too early to worry about that?
No, I don't think so. But again, I'm just sort of, you know, Rob didn't provide us that context, so I'm saying this is the analysis.
Okay.
But, you know, yeah, absolutely. You know, steals and saves are the two categories you can always attack the most easily because one player can tilt the balance. You know, you look at Jose, I'll use my NFBC league for an example because I always do. The guy who was leading the league in saves lost Jason Grilly, didn't get Melanson in free agency. That guy is now -1 in saves, which means the three teams behind him, and I'm one, are probably going to catch him.
I thought you said he was definitely going to get Melanson.
No. The guy who got Melanson is the guy who's leading the league overall, but he just lost K-Rod.
Ah, okay.
So he ends up with, effectively trades K-Rod for Melanson. Let's call that a slight bump. He's probably going to stay where he was in saves. Whereas the guy who was in the lead loses Grilly, doesn't get a replacement, he's going to come back. Now, I had Veras as my third closer. I have Chapman and Sergio Romo. I lost Veras, but I picked up Jose Cisneros as a free agent, so maybe I only lose 2-3 saves the rest of the way. I should be okay. So, but that's a category where the addition or subtraction of one player can make a real difference. Whereas if you're looking at it, all right, I'm chasing in home runs, just picking up you know, let's say Daniel Murphy over, let's say picking up Howie Kendrick over Daniel Murphy, that might net you one homer the rest of the way, or two homers the rest of the way. Dan Uggla over Omar Infante will move the needle for you in homers, but you have to have that kind of extreme change. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said, well, now I'm touching batting average, and you say, well, you can't move
Uggla's
your
batting average. Uggla's one of the few guys who can. That's the reason I mentioned it with him. He's hit a buck nine, or was hit
right.
a buck 99 last night.
But that's the thing. You know, people fall into the trap of saying, all right, we're two-thirds of the way into the season. I can't really move my batting average.
Oh, yeah, you can.
I mean, I had a bad week. I'm leading my league in batting average. Thank you, Miguel Cabrera. But with Cabrera out, a few guys slumping, I went from 280 to 276 in 1 week. Now, I still have a five-point lead, but in 2 weeks, that could be gone if my team keeps slumping.
I was leading in batting average, and I traded both Michael Brantley and Manny Machado over a period of weeks, and I've seen it affect the gap.
Right.
I Moustakas and, I want to say, Cleet Thomas, this is Ale Tout. But, yeah, all of a sudden you're like, wait, I had an 11-point lead, now I have a 4-point lead. And it's because you don't realize having those guys hitting 280 for you, or in Machado's case, 310, it's that bulk of at-bats. You can still – now, get to September, I wouldn't worry about it so much. You want to look at, you know, the distance between you and the next guy.
Sure.
But you can't start punting ratios to this early.
Right. Okay, last question. This one we don't have to make a comparison or a, you know, context. Tell me what you think of the guy. What are your thoughts on Scott Kazmir, the Ray? The rest of the way, he's been pretty damn good the last month or so, asks Zach.
Don't touch him. I just don't trust him. I don't think he's that good a pitcher anymore. I appreciate the velocity's been back. The numbers look okay. I don't trust him.
I'm a little bit more bullish than you are. I don't think the guy's going to be an ace, but he's added a curveball this year. He's been throwing it with increasing frequency. Not only does he have the velocity back, but another change of speed. You know, this was a guy who, before he started getting hurt, was a pretty top quality pitcher. Not an ace, but a 2-3 guy. I don't have a problem, if the matchups are right, continuing to put him out there. I don't trust him as a guy that I'm penciling in and forgetting about for the next 7 or 8 weeks. But in the right matchups, as long as there are no meltdowns, I could see leaving him out there 75% of the starts.
I'm fine with calling him a matchup guy.
All right, so let's look. And don't forget, in the Central, that means White Sox. It means Royals. You know, there are some. It means Astros. There's still a lot of favorable opportunities here the rest of the way.
What does it, though? You mentioned to those two teams, and maybe at home. But would you feel comfortable starting Scott Kazmir in the cell when the White Sox, for the one thing they can do, is have right-handed hitters who run into a ball?
Mm-hmm.
Would you start him at Enron, or whatever we're calling it these days? With that short porch wall, guys got to hit two, three homers, ruin the start for you.
The team that's going to lead the major leagues in strikeouts this year?
Sure. Yeah, Chris Carter also can hit a ball.
The White Sox that are 28th in OPS. I'm not expecting a shutout every single time out, but let's put it this way.
But these are the good matchups, you're saying.
AL-only league, just for argument's sake. Kazmir doesn't have to face the Indians. We know that. I'm sitting him against the Red Sox. I'm probably sitting him against the Rays the way they're going right now since Will Myers is there. I mean, that's a totally different offense. I'd probably still sit them against the Rangers as much as they've struggled. In Texas, still tough spot. The Jays have been a little bit hit and miss. A lot of power there, but still a lot of outs in that lineup. In the West, maybe Oakland. I mean, a good offense, but not a great offense.
Mariners have actually been a surprisingly good offensive team.
My point is that, all right, fine. I'm not calling him an ace the rest of the way, but I'm not being dismissive of him.
Okay.
Fair enough?
Yes.
I think you're wrong. Deal. All right, fine. I get the last word, so I'm always right.
Yes, you do.
And that will wrap it up for today. Thank you again to Joe Sheehan of Sports Illustrated, also writes for SI.com. Joe Sheehan newsletter, you ought to subscribe to it if you're not already. And where can the peeps find you on Twitter?
Joe_Sheehan.
There's a different Joe Sheehan who's got it without the underscore.
Very, very nice man. Actually, he beat me out for the Twitter handle. I beat him out for JoeSheehan.com. Dave Peace actually gave me that years ago. And he's a really nice guy. He's basically saying, I can't say I know him all that well, just from Twitter and emailing. And you have to understand, people are occasionally mean to me on Twitter. And
a little
this
bit.
Poor guy will log onto his Twitter account and be getting called, getting effed and MF'd. He's really been incredibly patient.
And then there's also the Joe Sheehan who works for the Blue Jays. He's a pretty good guy, too.
It's funny. I want to say maybe it was 6-7 years ago he started writing for Hardball Times before he moved to Pittsburgh and then the Jays.
Yeah.
And it was odd to be, what was I at the time, 34, 35 years old, and already I was obsolete. It was already a smarter, younger guy with my name in the industry.
You're competing with the future you.
I'm just really glad he went into the industry because I would be behind the glass doing tech, or I'd be a mid-level editor at some publishing house, because he would have run me out of the industry very quickly.
Excellent segue back there. Thank you very much to the guys behind the glass. Of course, the Goose who helps us out with the research, JoJo, Joy, Spree, and the whole crew. Thank you, the fans, for being the fan in the Fantasy 411. I will be back on Friday with JB and a special guest TBD. Probably won't be Joe Sheehan. I think we probably used up our Joe Sheehan chips for a while, but hopefully somebody fun and cool. So enjoy the podcast, enjoy your week, enjoy the trade deadline, and we'll see you on Friday on the Fantasy 411.